Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So this is the bit where we test the levels, Ruth. And this is a joke from Lou Sanders. He says, I waited an hour for my starter. So I complained. It's not rocket salad. Is that funny?
No, it's not. It doesn't really make any sense either.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. That's a real shame.
I didn't enjoy that.
No, you've done... Well, let's see if you enjoy this. We've been revising your British history. You've done the exam, which was not half as bad as you thought it was going to be.
No, I thought the Russian history one was awful, even though Russian history is easier, and the British history one was not as bad.
No, but when I was sort of helping you with a bit of your revision for the British history, mm-hmm. I was struck by how history repeats itself. What's the rhyme about history?
Mark Twain.
What did he say?
History doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes.
And it certainly does. I mean, all that stuff. One example was, what was he called? Honest Stanley Baldwin. Stanley Baldwin. So the Conservatives ran an election campaign.
In 1929.
Trying to get Stanley Baldwin
back in.
And their whole campaign was that he was Honest Stan.
The man you can trust.
That's how they thought they were going to get Stanley Baldwin back in. And it was almost exactly the same mistake in 2017, all those years later, when Theresa May ran a whole campaign on strong and stable.
But she did get in.
Well, she did get in only with the help of still a minority government. She got in with the help of the DUP.
Yeah.
That's just one example of history repeating itself.
Yeah.
It's a whole, from the night I was amazed about, from the start of the 20th century, right the way up to the present day, it's an argument between...
And Churchill did the same thing in 1945
to get back in after the war.
Mr. Churchill's declaration to the voters, and it was meant to be, oh, everyone loves Churchill and he's really strong, and then he didn't get in. And then,
Right up to the present day. And the whole economic history is an argument.
So boring.
Well, it's an argument between whether we have austerity and control the money supply, or we spend money and borrow money. And that was right the way through. I don't understand money at all.
Not even a little bit.
I understand
I'm okay at managing money. Like, I go wild spending all the money, and I know how.
Although you did get a parcel this morning.
Yeah, it was Dad. You can't out me like that.
What was it?
It was a dress, but it was secondhand.
Right. What's the website?
Depop.
So you're always on Depop buying secondhand clothes, but you also sell.
I've bought two things and I've sold two things.
Right.
No, I've bought three things.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be a few parcels arrived, but maybe some of them are not Depop.
Yeah, it's Depop. No. Everything's Depop that I've got online.
Yeah. And is that for economic purposes or to save
planets? First of all, it's good for everyone because it's way, way, way cheaper. So, it's stuff that people have worn once. Like, especially, girls with, night out clothes and stuff, you don't tend to wear them. You wear them a few times, but nothing more than that. And even when you are wearing them, you're only wearing it for a few hours. You're not, you know, it's not the clothes you wear all the time. And so they'll sell them, which is good for the environment because, you know, it takes so much water to create clothes. Mm. And then, also a lot of factories are, abusive to their employees and stuff, especially in China and things like that.
You're doing such good work, Ruth.
Well, no. And I'm not at all because... The best thing to do is to not ever buy clothes because you still it still has an environmental impact because there's the car that needs to drive the package and stuff. But it's better than buying like fast fashion. And then also way cheaper. Because people sell dresses that they've bought for like £50 off websites and resell them for like a tenner because, you know, there's no need. If you have worn it a bit, then you're making more money than you would to just give it to the charity shop. Yes. So it's good.
I understand.
You asked the question.
Should we start? Should we start with a little DMC?
I don't know what that means.
You don't know what DMC?
Oh, deep meaningful chat.
Deep meaningful chat. I've got a whole glossary of terms that are used in Love Island.
I'm so glad it's back. Honestly, I sit there every single night and I know I shouldn't like it. I know I shouldn't like it, but I do, and everyone can...
Do one?
Yeah, pretty much. But I just do. I sit there watching it with a big grin on my face. I just love it.
Well, yes.
Also, my 30-year-old brother, or older than 30, I think, my 30-year-old brother was texting me about it last night.
But you are a little extra when it comes to Love Island, aren't you?
What do you mean?
Extra, over the top.
No, I'm not extra when it comes to Love Island. Well, I know what extra means.
What does extra mean?
Extra is, I use extra quite a bit. Everyone uses extra quite a lot. Just being extra.
How could I be extra?
You could be extra. I mean, you're not, but if you wore like a sequin shirt or something, right, you'd be extra. But also, you could use it to be like, you know, if you meet someone and they really like you and they keep messaging you or something, you thought, so extra.
Right. But you've got to be careful not to prang out.
I've never heard that before.
Well, you see, I've got this glossary of terms.
No one uses prang out. Maybe it's a southern thing, I don't know.
No, these are all from Love Island.
I've never heard anyone on Love Island
say
it.
You're not watching closely enough. Prang out means to suffer a sudden wave of anxiety and panic, usually because of a love interest. So if somebody immediately says that they fancy you, you might prang out.
Never heard that before.
Well, you're getting a bit salty. You know,
salty.
We did that last time. Last time we did salty. We did peng sort.
You know what peng means?
Yeah, we all know peng because it's chicken peng as well. Peng sort is a very good looking person. A worldie.
Worldie. Yeah.
Yeah. What's a worldie?
Just like really good looking.
Someone so attractive they are out of this world.
I would say that boys use worldie more than girls.
Yeah, it's used in football, worldie. If you score, if you score a really good goal, you might say that's a great goal. Oh, that's a worldie.
About the goal, not about the footballers.
No,
because I was going to say that's quite homoerotic.
Yes, it is. Well, there's a lot of that goes on in football. Swilled.
Oh, throwing a drink in someone's face.
When you have a drink thrown in your face. There's been a bit of controversy about this Love Island. I read this in The Sun, so it's not that reliable, but it says here, Love Island faces a race storm.
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of this on Twitter.
Right, what's it all about?
Well, I mean, I've not read the article, but what's been going on Twitter and stuff is just that they never give as much airtime to the black contestants. Mm. And they're also picked last in the lineup.
That's what the story said.
But,
fourth year in a row that the black girl, I think, was chosen last.
Well, last year it was the black boy, but yeah.
So Yuanda Biala, who's the black girl, Yuanda, she's 23. She's now paired up with a fellow scientist, Michael Griffiths. So is that still...
She doesn't like him.
Oh, doesn't
and
she?
And I don't understand, because I Michael's one of my favourite boys.
Mm.
But Yuanda's, she's, like, gorgeous and really smart and stuff. Like, she went to uni at 16, mental. But she is a bit dry. There's other ones who don't get much airtime, but it's because they're not doing anything interesting.
Mm.
But that, like, she's lovely, and I think there is like a lot of when they first go in and pick. There's a lot of like racial stereotyping and stuff, and they don't go for her. Samira from last year, she was really. I think she was treated unfairly, and they didn't show a lot of her relationship. And I think it is like a subconscious thing that. Mm. The producers imagine that people want to see white people more or something. Not on purpose. I do think it's subconscious. And I think it's just because there's such an inherent racism in the UK.
Not just in the UK.
No.
Generally, I would think it was a human characteristic. If you just choose on sight, you choose
someone who looks like you. Lots of studies done into how people end up with people who look like them.
Yeah.
But I think that what it really highlights is that's why we need more Black, Asian, minority ethnic people working as producers and as creators,
well,
because
yes,
then
you, can do
then
all
you
that.
Highlight them.
Yeah, you can correct it a wee bit, but at the end of the day, if you're making a snap decision,
oh yeah, no, I don't think it's their fault. Yeah, yeah.
Person if you
I
want,
don't but. Think it's. I think the son's argument is kind of a bit stupid because it's like you can't help who you find attractive. Like that's it's human instinct. But I think that's because of like societal conditioning, which has to be like a bigger change. It's not.
No,
it's not the contestants of Love Island.
No,
yeah,
I agree with you. Despite all that, though, there has been a certain amount of controversy because they did say there were going to be diverse body types.
Oh, yeah, and they've got this plus-size girl.
Plus-size girl. Who just looks
I'm
normal.
Bigger than her. She's just... She's also, like...
She's called Anna, isn't she?
She is probably a bit bigger, and she's also, like, taller and broader and stuff than the other girls. But she's got, like, the Kim Kardashian ideal body type. She's not, like, a girl who's a little bit chubby. She's, like, a little bit chubby, but it's because her boobs are big and her bum's big. Like, that's...
Yes.
She's got the... they call it
she's
thick.
Not got a. She's not got a sort of...
No, no, no. She's yeah, and she's not, like, normal chubby. She's, like...
No, normal
Instagram
chubby, you'd be chubby.
Chubby,
you'd have chubby arms.
Yeah,
and
well, you just look...
A bit of a belly and all that sort of stuff.
But she doesn't look
and
like that at all.
If you want more information on that, just go down to Wakefield Shopping Centre.
Dad.
Anyway, yes, so they're not really diverse people. The other big controversy, certainly last year, now I don't know whether you spot it this year, was on the amount of plastic surgery. Even the boys, you know, the boys look as though, not so much plastic surgery, but it does look to be sort of steroid enhanced. I only watched the first episode, but you don't, you maybe get that from working out at the gym, but... You would need to do the amount of working out to get that sort of washboard stomach.
Well, yeah, but a lot of them are like the a lot of them do like a bit of bodybuilding or whatever, and you take it's like protein.
They take proteins, isn't it? So there's protein shakes, they're called protein
shakes.
Dear
God.
But this all that stuff is no good for you. I mean, in that respect, it's not a good example, is it, really?
No.
I mean, I know you're watching it for fun.
I don't think it's a great example. And also, it is, like, difficult. If you're having a fine day and you're feeling okay, then it's just fun, entertaining television. But if you're having a bad day already and you feel really chubby or someone's, I don't know, turned you down or rejected you or something, and you sit down and watch these... Like, especially the girls, like they are gorgeous and stuff. You don't really want to be sat on the sofa with a pack of crisps watching people who are... Like skinnier than you.
Yes. But sitting on the sofa with a pack of crisps watching Love Island is your favourite...
My favourite pastime.
It is indeed. And you like Love Island because when Love Island comes on the TV, it means it's summer. You're saying that.
Yeah, I mean, everyone says that, though.
Do they?
Everyone says it's summer's coming. But it's the most, like, basic Fiat 500 thing to say, but...
Fiat 500?
That's what they call it on, like, Fiat 500 Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, so if you're like... like a basic white girl. You love Love Island and you have a Fiat 500. So it's Fiat 500 Twitter.
Well, you learn something every day. Yes, you're talking about that, about sitting watching Love Island with a packet of crisps when you're feeling chubby and all that.
This better not be you calling me fat or I'm going to kick off massively.
Every week, or every day, basically, there's something in the papers about the obesity crisis, as we have to call it.
I don't think it's caused by delivery.
Well, according to this story, they play a part in it. I'll read it to you. Because we got a when I was with your sister, sister who lives in London.
Oh, she is big on the delivery. She's always got a delivery. That's because in London...
There's more choice.
There's more choice in delivery. I don't even think they have it in Wakefield yet. They have it in Leeds, definitely.
No, I think they've got Deliveroo and Just Eat. I've seen them all.
No, they have Just Eat's just a... online delivery service, but they don't delivery
it's the same
like
thing as delivery.
No, it's not the same thing as delivery at all.
Well, go on, what's Just Eat and Deliveroo?
So Just Eat is like an online directory of all the places, but they still send their delivery driver to get it. Whereas Deliveroo, you order it on Deliveroo, but then Deliveroo have their own delivery people that they send to the restaurant to pick it up.
Right.
So,
okay,
but like Just Eat is just for takeaways.
Well,
whereas Deliveroo, you can order like a Nando's Deliveroo. Even though Nando's don't do their own.
Ah, right,
delivery. Or like you can order a Wagamama's delivery, but you they don't indeed. Do their
we're,
own
We're going to come to that. The food delivery giant Deliveroo is promoting party buckets of fried chicken to some of the fattest postcodes in the country.
What an excellent marketing strategy.
While sushi and edamame beans are suggested for healthier areas. On Friday, KFC was the first featured restaurant in the choice of home-delivered food. So I presume it's when you go on the website. In Doncaster, where more than 7 out of 10 people are overweight or obese, the first menu item was a £31.99 party bucket with 14 pieces. Sounds great, this actually. With 14 pieces of original fried chicken, 8 fillets, 8 wings, and a popcorn chicken. KFC also came first in Rotherham. So it's Doncaster and Rotherham KFC, where 71% of residents are overweight or obese. And in Durham.
It doesn't take much to be overweight, though. Just
no,
like
it doesn't. We've said that before.
Yeah.
And in Durham, 68%, right? So those are the sort of fatter postcodes, Doncaster, Rotherham, and Durham.
They've got
party. If you go onto Deliveroo's website,
They're just party people.
Party bucket, right. In contrast, in the affluent Clifton area of Bristol, very nice, I used to live there, the first featured restaurant was Wagamama, and the first menu item, a Nourish Your Body Chicken Ramen and Edamame. Yo Sushi was second, and KFC third. In Bristol, 55% of people are overweight or obese. So we get the picture here.
It's still high, isn't it?
It is.
Again, the overweight. It takes nothing to be overweight.
We're all overweight. We've said that before, and you said, are you calling me fat, Daz?
Yeah, well, I'll say it again.
In the order of the suggested choices are the results of an algorithm that takes into account customer reviews, location, and delivery time. So it's a vicious circle, isn't it? Because the algorithm, you know, and then it'll be top of the list.
But this is also like
top of the list.
It's also a class issue, isn't it? Healthy food is
very
more
much.
Expensive, and it's wrong. Really?
In Dulwich, an affluent South London suburb, the first featured restaurant sold sushi with a tuna, carrots and cucumber dish as the first menu item. The second sold Thai food and the third was a Japanese restaurant specialising in seafood. Well, all that stuff, as you say, it's an economic issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
That would be affordable in Dulwich.
That's why,
probably not affordable in Doncaster.
Exactly. Obesity and class is intrinsically linked. The KFC party bucket is £31, but you get loads of food for it. Whereas
that'd be for four or five
people. £31 would get you 3 dishes maybe at Wagamama's.
Yeah.
Actually, probably just 2 if you take into account the delivery charges and everything. Mm. I've talked about this with David, my brother, also your son. You'll know him. we talked about this before, is that like Deliveroo is actually more expensive because you pay the normal amount for the dish, I think, and then you have to pay extra because Deliveroo are doing the delivery service. Whereas takeaways, you know, Chinese takeaway, fish and chips, whatever.
I wish I'd thought
cheaper.
Of Deliveroo because they don't have to produce anything at all.
All you're doing is just employing the people. Yeah,
it's just a website.
Yeah.
And then somebody else is cooking all the food. This is a quote, actually, from a Deliveroo cyclist. He said, it would be impossible to make a living if it wasn't for the KFC orders. The food is often delivered to those who can least afford it for health and financial reasons. In fact, it's heart-wrenching to see lives lost to the humiliation of obesity and their addiction as they open the door and reach out for their food. It sort of paints a horrible picture, that. Just Eat, it says, also promotes KFC heavily in some areas with high obesity rates, including Oldham and Stoke-on-Trent.
It's also northern areas, isn't it?
Yep.
Overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
Well, there we go.
Should we look at some of the emails? We were talking last week about our mild disappointment at not being voted best podcast of the year.
So was that only last week?
We forgot. We've pushed it aside. Who cares? You know,
I don't care.
We've moved on. I don't care. We've all moved on. John Med, though, sent us an email saying, Martin and Ruth, don't be too downhearted at not winning, well, we're not too downhearted, not winning the British Podcast Awards. As you can see, you cleaned up at the Are We There Yet 2018 Awards. Now, the Are We There Yet Awards are John Med's own personal blog, where he does some of these categories in his awards are things like Best Breakfast, Best Gig. His best gig, for instance, was The Prodigy at the Nottingham Arena.
What was his best breakfast?
His best breakfast was at the Warsaw Diner Canning Circus, but he doesn't say exactly what he had.
Yeah, no, that's what I was hoping it was just going to be my ex at home.
Yeah, well, that was it. Best walk, Attenborough Nature Reserve by a country mile. Very amusing there, you see. And best podcast, Ruthie, Me and My Dad. I went onto his blog and we're his best podcast. So that's brilliant. Thank you for that, John. Mark Bernstein writes to us and he said, last week we mentioned the movie Yesterday, which is this film that I'm very much hoping doesn't turn out to be duff, but I'm told by people who've seen a preview of it that is absolute.
Well, I think it looks like garbage in the advert.
Oh, do you think so?
I think it looks like it'd be bad.
Yeah, well, apparently it is.
I don't think the premise is great either. Like, I think the premise is funny to discuss. Like, I think it's a good parlour topic.
It is.
But I don't think it would make... I don't think there's enough legwork in it for the film, for a film.
Yeah. Well, Mark Bernstein says, I am Mark Bernstein from North London, and I've really enjoyed your podcast.
Hello, Mark Bernstein from London.
Bless him. And he's really enjoyed the podcast. So he said, you mentioned the movie Yesterday. What he's pointing out is that it's an old premise. He says, my favourite movie is a little-known Joan Collins 1971 science fiction romantic movie called Quest for Love. It was set in a parallel universe where John F. Kennedy, still alive, and was secretary of a still-existent League of Nations, which morphed into the United Nations, and Leslie Howard did not die in World War II. This is before my time, let alone before your time, because in the context of the movie, it never happened. Keep up your brilliant work, says Mark, which I must refer to this podcast, I assume.
Not our filmmaking careers.
No. But, yeah, but it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But there have been other
films. Well, that's
films.
A famous thing. What if Shakespeare had never existed? Like, yeah.
What if Shakespeare never existed?
We'd have a lot of different words, because a lot of the words we get from Shakespeare, a lot of insults and stuff.
Yes, and a lot of well-known expressions.
Like sayings, yeah. Brave New World would never have been written.
Yeah, yeah. Howard Raucus wrote to us, and he said, I liked the Hundreds and Thousands.
Raucus, that's such a good surname.
Yeah. He may, I don't know, he runs a record shop. He sometimes writes...
Oh, do you think maybe it's...
Yeah, he writes to my other podcast as well, but he's written to this one.
What? I don't like to think of people as having any other
yes, well, the other podcast that I do. He says, I like the Hundreds and Thousands joke. He said, I think this must be... It's where the guy goes in and says, can I have an ice cream? And the ice cream man says, Hundreds and Thousands? He said, well, let's just start with one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good... I think that's funnier than that one today. The one today was poor.
Yeah, well, I'll pass your message on to the chap, Lou Sanders, I think the name
was. Yeah, it was.
Lou Sanders, I'll pass it on. And tell him he must try harder. But anyway, Howard Raucus says, I like the Hundreds and Thousands joke, but that probably says more about me than the quality of the joke. The main reason for mailing is about the music section of the show, because he is a total music buff.
Mm.
He says, usually I prefer Ruthie's choice.
Yes! You know what? I prefer my choice as well.
Yeah, he says, partly because it's always nice to hear something new, brackets to me, and partly because Martin, that's me, seems to have a love of 1960s country rock.
It's actually really true. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, yeah, which, country music.
Which is perhaps the most, well, I'm going to respond to this in a sec, which is perhaps the most bland genre of all. It's neither country music nor rock.
See, that's unfair, because the Eagles is country rock, and the Eagles are not bland in any way.
Well, here you go. He thinks that a lot of people say they are.
Yeah, I know.
It is neither country music nor rock, with all the emotion of real country music, and he's put in brackets Patsy Cline, Hank Williams,
Dolly Parton,
removed, along with all the energy of rock music, everything from Eddie Cochran to Motorhead, brackets 70s.
Neither of us are much into rock, like
no,
proper rock.
I did go
music,
and see Motorhead though.
Really?
Yes, in 1981 at the old tram shed in Leeds, which has now disappeared, but there was a huge old tram shed, which was turned very briefly into a concert venue. Terrible.
Trams. Leeds just cannot get a tram.
Terrible. It's true, actually. Terrible acoustics. But Motorhead, of course, just ridiculously loud.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, ridiculously loud.
You don't... The thing, I feel like the thing that people probably wouldn't realise, because you talk about music a lot, you don't like loud music at all. You don't like rock, really. Like, you
no,
do like it a bit, but don't really like it.
No, I'm not keen on
anything
rock.
Like metal. You don't like music to be screamy or loud.
No, no.
Which I would have guessed you would, because...
Mm. No, rock it's completely passing me by, heavy rock. I used to do a heavy rock disco at a pub called the Wapentake in Sheffield when I was a young man.
Some of your stories sound made up.
Well, the pub was called the Wapentake. It was Sheffield. And I used to be the guest turn at the heavy rock disco. But I used to play...
Who was the regular?
Well, there was just some guy in a denim jacket who, with acne, who played a lot of, you know, Motorhead and Saxon and all that stuff. And Queen, maybe a bit. That was the early days of Queen. Because when Queen started, they were very much heavy rock.
Rock music is fun to see live. Like, I would never sit at home listening to it on headphones or anything. No. But it is fun to see live. I went to see Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes, who is, like, I think it's, like, metal rock, probably.
Mm. Was that at Leeds Fest?
At Leeds Fest, yeah. They were, like, the surprise act. Or, like, surprise headline. I can't remember what it's called. Surprise thing. And they got everyone to get out of
I introduced a heavy rock band on stage at Leeds Fest.
Yeah, I know. I remember I was there.
From Wales. I can't remember the name of the band.
No, I don't either.
They didn't go on to do anything huge, I don't think.
That's a shame. It would have been great if you'd have introduced, like...
Queen.
Well, yeah. It's doubtful that you would have done, but yeah. No, and they got everyone to go out of the pit and run around and swap halves. It was just, like, they are good... They're very
anyway.
Like,
I'm passionate. Disagreeing with Howard Walkers because I've only played. I play.
You are barring them.
Well, I'm. You know, that's the jury's out on that. But I played Poco, and I played probably New Riders of the Purple Sage. Possibly, I played.
I think you've played.
No, right. Well, they're coming then. Watch out for them.
Yay.
But I played Poco and a couple of bands like that. But by and large, I think my music's been quite varied because I played, you know, anything from Andy Gibb. I played Andy Gibb, I Just Want to Be Your Everything. That's on there. Scott Walker. He says, I enjoy how you respond to each other's selections. You know, how you say mine's rubbish and I say I quite like yours or whatever.
No, I'd never say yours is rubbish because it's not usually rubbish. Some of it's not to my taste.
No. Okay. He says, your choices leave a big gap, he says, with the 1970s and 80s rarely getting a look in.
True. But then I would never cover the 70s or 80s. Like, The Cure are from the 80s, aren't they?
Yes.
And I like them. And also, what's the band who do Crimson and Clover?
Oh, Tommy James and the Shondells, they're 60s.
Are they
60s? They might have been remade.
Maybe it was. Oh, yeah, The Cure. I like that song. Feels Like Heaven.
That's Fiction Factory.
No, it's not.
I think it is.
Just Like Heaven.
Just Like Heaven, yeah. Feels Like Heaven, I think, is...
The Smiths also.
Yeah, Smiths are sort of late 80s and 90s, really.
Oh, into the 90s, so?
Oh, I think so.
But I like them, but, like, I would never cover them because you already know them. Do you know what I mean? So it's not as interesting.
Precisely. But anyway, he says, the 70s may be the decade, it's obviously Howard's decade that Style forgot, but among the dross there are some real gems. Blondie, he says, well, we wouldn't play Blondie, they're a bit too well-known, they played it a lot.
What's a famous Blondie song?
Famous Blondie, Tidy's High, Hanging on
to
the
To be
telephone.
Honest, you could play Blondie and I probably wouldn't...
Well, I might do it one week.
And he says, any of the songs.
And the Buzzcocks, he says. So he says to... and this
the
is,
Buzzcocks are one of those bands that, like, cool people are into. Mm. I always think of the Buzzcocks as, like, a cool girl band.
But. Anyway, so to add a bit more variety, how about introducing a listener's choice? My suggestion would be Brand New Cadillac.
I don't think we've got enough listeners for that. Just be the same four people over and over again.
Ruth, we've got 200,000 downloads or whatever. So there's got to be more than four people in there, unless everybody's downloading it 50 times. He says, how about introducing a listener's choice? My suggestion would be Brand New Cadillac by Vince Taylor. British 1950s rock and roll artists are quite often and quite rightly discarded as poor diluted imitators of the great American rockers. And I would follow that view. He says, but this track is every bit as good as anything that came from the States. Well, we've got a bit of a surprise for you.
It's a surprise to me also.
And it's a surprise to Ruth also, as we go into our music section. We'll take a short break and then the music.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This week for one
week... I thought we were taking a break. I was going to go.
this week for one week only, we will have a listener's choice. We're not going to do that because who wants to hear 20 seconds of their favourite song? But I'm going to play Vince Taylor and Brand New Cadillac, something that I wasn't familiar with, but he's a very interesting guy. Vince Taylor and the Playboys. So we're going back to about 1958 for this one. And this is for the first and possibly the only time listener's choice, but I'll adopt it. Vince Taylor and the Cadillacs. There you go, Vince Taylor, Brand New Cadillac from the 1950s, a sort of British imitator, if you like, of the American rock of the time, these Eddie Cochran people. I'm sorry we're keeping you up. I've never known anyone yawn so much. So you weren't yawning.
I've yawned three times.
That's quite a
lot.
That's
not many.
It's enough times. But we're trying to entertain you here. So Vince Taylor and the Playboys there.
When you said, oh, we'll listen to this, listeners, I was expecting it to be more like Rolling Stones-y. Yeah.
Well, that's rock and roll-y, you know, rock and roll.
I liked it.
Very much like Eddie Cochran.
Again, I just wouldn't choose to listen to it.
No. That's more sort of rockabilly, which is a sort of like a swamp Southern American version of rock and roll.
Hmm. Anyway, it was good.
Vince Taylor, very interesting guy, because initially his family was in America. So he grew up, bizarrely, he came to Britain and did rock and roll in Britain, but he's from America. And his sister used to go out with Joe Barbera of Hanna-Barbera, the cartoon company that made Yogi Bear and Huckleberry Hound.
I literally could not care.
No, and I didn't think you would. And later on, he moved to France and lived in France and had a drug problem, took a lot of drugs, had a wild and eccentric lifestyle, and ended up as an aeroplane engineer in Switzerland. Bizarre.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what have you got?
Sir, I've got a song called Good As Hell by Lizzo.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
Is it good as hell?
Hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
Is it good as hell?
Woo, child, tired of the bullshit. Gone, dust your shoulders off. Keep it moving, yes, Lord. Trying to get some new shit in there. Swimwear, going to the pool shit. Come now, come dry your eyes. You know you a star, you can touch the sky. I know that it's hard.
Well, I read that as Lizzie. You called it Lizza.
Lizzo.
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 Oh, just Lizzo.
Yes, Lizzo. Oh,
I thought it said Lizzie when I read it.
No, Lizzo.
Lizzo and Good As Hell. I presume that's about sex and love and things.
No.
Well, what's it about?
You've misinterpreted Lizzo. Okay. It's about like body positivity and being like really secure in yourself.
She's quite a large woman.
Yeah, she is. But like, that's not. She's just about like girl power, really. But She is quite Route One, like she's quite popular at the moment and is very clearly like poppy.
Good song, I have to say. I like the song.
She is brilliant. I think she's unbelievably talented. Like I think she's one of the most talented people in like modern music at the moment. She's a professional.
So what's the mushy? She talks about a mushy in there. Mushy in the bushy or something.
Well, I mean, that will be maybe about sex and stuff. But the lines are like, if he don't love you anymore, then walk your fine ass out the door.
Walk your fine ass out the door.
Like, it is about, like, positivity. But she's also, like, really an incredible musician. So she was a professional flautist.
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 Yeah.
Not flautist.
No, I would say flautist. She played the flute.
She played the flute. Yeah. She was a classical...
They should call it flutist, really.
She was a classical flautist. And she was at university and she was in, like, a proper, like...
Ivy League.
Like, the best... whatever, the best philharmonic orchestra or whatever, like that. Yeah. Like, and she was doing, so she'd do like 7 in the morning till 7 at night being a flautist, and then 7 in the evening to 7 the next morning being a rapper, and she was Lizzo. So she had like this double thing where she was Melissa, that's her real name, and Lizzo, two identities and stuff. And then she kind of just took off. She's does songs that are just like fun.
If you do want to get in touch with us with a sort of music suggestion or a comment on the music, you can do. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. Or to comment on anything else, Love Island or anything, Martin and Ruth, or Deliveroo, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you do want to hear the songs in full, then they'll be on the Spotify playlist, which you can find if you just search Martin and Ruth on Spotify, or Ruthie and me and my dad, either way.
Now, Ruth, over the months we've been doing this podcast, we've discussed comedy quite a bit, and we've talked about Friends and everything.
Discussed it. We've made comedy.
I wish. But we've discussed comedy quite a bit.
Yes.
And whenever we discuss comedy, you sort of disparage me in a way by saying, oh, yeah, here we go again, Fawlty Towers, blah, blah, blah. And it's become apparent to me that you've never watched Fawlty Towers. So I laid out the whole sum of £1.89 on Amazon Prime, got one episode of Fawlty Towers, and forced you to watch it.
You didn't force me. Like, I was happy to watch it because this is my job.
Well, anyway. See? Yeah. We forced you to watch Fawlty Towers, and you watched it this morning.
You said we as if the listeners were like, oh, yeah, watch Fawlty Towers.
Well, it is a we. I'll tell you why I say it. It's because I think it's probably Mark, my producer on Talk Radio, or it's somebody anyway at Talk Radio, who said to me, well, get her to watch it. So she just keeps taking the mickey out of you because, you know, my view is it's the greatest.
I still don't know how you get the like work out of it.
There's only 12 episodes.
Yeah.
So you only have 11 more to watch, and you've watched the whole series. But this, I just put a random one in, not even the best.
It was episode one, was it?
Episode one of season two.
Season two, there's only 12 episodes, that's a season.
Well, that's where we differ from the Americans. Season one was 6 episodes, yeah, season two was 6 episodes.
Fair. That's like Fleabag.
View on it, please.
I did enjoy it.
Yeah,
I did think it was funny. It feels less like, oh, it's hilarious, and more like, oh, it's really safe and warm. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I thought one of the things that you wouldn't like about Fawlty Towers is that it's politically incorrect. It's something you couldn't make
nowadays. But it's of its time. Yeah, I wouldn't like it if it was made, like, right, some of the jokes are funny. Some of the jokes are not funny because of the time that they were made in, like, some of the bits with Manuel are a bit cringy. And
that's what I thought. That's why you couldn't make it nowadays.
Yeah. No, but you couldn't make it nowadays because it also wouldn't... It wouldn't work nowadays. It wouldn't be funny. But a lot of the jokes are, like, timeless jokes.
Yeah, I think it would
think it would be. All that stuff with Manuel would feel really
weird. I agree with you about the Manuel stuff. But
all the rest of it would be funny.
It's like a farce, in a way. It's like a little play.
No.
You can see why there's only 6 of them, because it's not like Friends where it sort of rolls
on. Because it's not the characters as well. Like, you don't really learn anything about the characters.
Well,
particularly.
You learn that they're sort of locked in a loveless marriage, him and Sybil.
Yeah, but...
And you couldn't probably do that stuff these days, the stuff, you know, where she's a bit of a battle axe. I mean, they don't even have the word battle axe anymore.
I mean, but also, like, I don't think I would find that funny if it was modern characters, because I would find it rude to the woman. But it's of the time it was made in. Yeah, no, of course you could make it.
But some of it is classic timeless comedy.
Yeah, no, some of it is. But that doesn't, like...
And
I'm not saying
it's... And you did enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I did. I did enjoy it. I'm not saying I didn't. But I wouldn't want it to be made now. I think if it was made now, it wouldn't be funny. That doesn't mean it's not funny.
And it's like watching silent movies, silent comedies, because you're relying on sort of classic gags that would...
Well, no, I mean, it's very Shakespearean, the episode that we watched, in a way, you know, it's all mistaken.
We ought to say the one we watched was Communication Problems.
Yeah, it was all like...
Mrs. Richards.
Who, yeah, she couldn't hear, and whose was the money, and everyone kept getting the wrong end of the stick and blah, blah, blah. That's what happens in Shakespearean comedy, like,
it's classic.
And that was all really, really funny. The only bits I didn't like were the bits with Manuel, and like the stuff with the women, like, you take it with a pinch of salt and it's fine. And I thought Basil Fawlty is, like, personable and a good character and stuff.
It's a great character, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
Basil Fawlty. I mean, John Cleese, what annoys me is that John Cleese, all right, he's now probably mid-70s, maybe nearly 80. John Cleese said something, he's moved to Nevis, and he says London doesn't feel like a British city anymore, which I can sort of...
Oh, that is so EDL.
Well, yeah, people have
come
said
on.
That.
That's because people don't like change. Oh, it's not British anymore because it's not all British, white British people living there. Like, that's just because cities change.
But he's entitled to his opinion.
No, he's wrong there.
He's entitled to his
opinion. He's wrong.
Well,
you don't believe that he's wrong?
Yeah, I don't believe that he's wrong. I don't believe that he's wrong because
the only way he's saying that London doesn't feel British anymore is because of the people being different.
No, I think
multiculturalism doesn't make something less British.
No, I agree with you, and I think it's great that London is a melting pot and all that sort of stuff. But what he's looking nostalgically back to doesn't feel like Britain in the 60s.
It doesn't feel like Britain in the 60s.
Yeah, but he's an old guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you what annoys me. What annoys me is people are taking what he said there, putting their own interpretation on it, or putting what they imagine might be his interpretation of it, and retrospectively dissing Monty Python and Fawlty Towers.
No, that's not fair. Like,
yeah, Giles Corran wrote a whole column in the Times where he just sort of dissed John Cleese. And to me, Fawlty Towers is a work of genius.
I think I really enjoyed that episode of Fawlty Towers I watched, and it feels nostalgic for a time where of comedy that's just silly. And it's lovely. Like, I really did like it. But I don't think that gives John Cleese a free pass to say things. And I think that thing that he said about Britain not feeling British anymore.
No, it's London,
is,
he said, I think. London doesn't
feel like a British city. I don't think we should criticise things from the time that they were in. Like, we should acknowledge it and acknowledge to say the stuff with Manuel, not really right. It's kind of racial stereotyping, and it's kind of cheap shots at immigrants, really. I'm not saying that it wasn't funny in the time that it was in, but I think you shouldn't completely give everything a free pass that you see in shows, but you also need to, if you're John Cleese or something, we don't live in the 60s anymore, and
no,
you can't say stuff like that. Because it's not true.
Let me tell you my take on it. I don't think London feels like a British city anymore. I don't think New York feels like New York anymore. I don't think Athens feels like a Greek city anymore. I don't think Paris feels like a French city anymore. Sure, the landmarks are still there. But what I'm saying is, when you go into a place and it's like Starbucks and it's lots of, it's all become internationalised. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, when I first went to New York, it was like amazing.
Last time you were in New York, though?
Probably about 10 years ago, maybe, something like
you
that.
You were in New York in 2009?
Yeah, I did a show from New York with Edouard Lepaglia, my French friend. We went over to New York and did a show. It might have been in 2000,
yeah,
certainly in the 2000s. But what I felt was, when I first went there, when it was the 1970s, it really felt like, it felt strange, it felt foreign, it was completely different from London, and the whole ethos of life was completely different from London.
New York still feels different.
Because they've got yellow cabs.
I mean, I don't know. I don't really know, but Athens. I mean, I've been to, like, Paris. I think it feels very different to London. Like, very, extremely different. Like, I know that it has similar chains and stuff, but Paris does feel different. The people are different. The culture's different. The atmosphere of the city is different. Like, it is. They are different places. But also, I think the problem with what John Cleese said is that London doesn't feel like a British city anymore. Yeah, it doesn't feel like a British city from the 60s, because it isn't a British city from the 60s. It's a British city whatever year it's in.
Yeah.
In 2000, it was a British city in 2000. A city doesn't stay the same because the people change and the place changes. Whenever I've been to London, it feels like a British city, but because also, I don't want it to feel like a British city from the 60s. The only people that would want it to feel like a British city from the 60s are straight white men.
Have you seen Austin Powers? It's great fun. That's a British city from the 60s.
No, but that's the problem
Judy
with nostalgia.
Christy, Michael Caine in an E-type Jaguar?
That is the entire problem with nostalgia, is that you remember all the good bits and none of the bad bits.
I can't think of any bad bits of the 60s.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Vietnam, obviously.
No, but also, like, women's rights. Like, and that's only one example of, like, women's rights. But also, attitudes towards immigrants.
Why only straight white men? Why wouldn't homosexual white men in their 70s?
I don't remember the exact year when homosexuality was decriminalised.
67.
So, okay, until 66, they're not going to be having a great deal of fun. And then still the attitude. It's like, you know what I mean? Nostalgia. It's the same. You've read Orwell. Like, Orwell was nostalgic for pre-war England. Like, you're nostalgic for whatever time you don't live in, but it's not a better time.
So you'll be going to university. I mean, at the moment your focus is on exams, but you will be going to university. And I'm wondering, almost certainly. I'm just wondering how much trepidation you view it with. You know, how much?
I'm not really nervous at all.
You're not nervous about
it? Not now. Like, no. I probably will be, you know, before I go. Feel nervous about it at the moment, at least.
I'm reading this story about James Murray, who is the father of Ben Murray. You've probably seen him on the news. Ben Murray was the Bristol student who killed himself. Yeah. And his father, who's a very smart guy, he's got a background in data analytics. He's devised, or is devising, an early warning system to help universities build a rounded picture of undergraduates by linking records of exam results with data on lecture attendance, grades and disciplinary or rent issues. Because his son...
It was the whole picture thing.
Because his son was, you know, he'd sort of disappeared from the system. He wasn't attending lectures and all that sort of stuff. Mm. And, of course, he got a letter saying attend lectures. The father, the parents, they weren't informed. Yeah. There was nothing like that. Northumbria University's testing his system created by James Murray, son Ben killed himself. So it gives an overview of whether students...
It should be Bristol, shouldn't it, really, testing the system?
Well, you'd have thought so, but anyway, Northumbria, I suppose, while it's a test. Mm. The tool gives an overview of whether students are paying rent, attending lectures, handing in essays, checking books out at the libraries, and could trigger help rather than penalties. Because that was all that was happening to his son. He was just being told, oh, you've got to do this and you've got to do that and you haven't paid your rent or whatever.
I think, like, people forget that you're either 18 or 19 usually when you go to uni, which is so young. Like, it's and you go from having a complete support network, well, I mean, if you're lucky, you do, and a vast majority of people and friends, like, you've known, and a lot of people have friends they've known for years and years and years who can tell if something's up with you, and then you go to having nothing and being completely on your own. And I think it's a really hard transition. I think it would be hard for anyone, but especially being so young, it's actually amazing that no one's thought, oh, maybe this is...
Maybe we ought to keep an eye on them, and he's doing it digitally, which is good. Ben's family did not know that the 19-year-old was, quotes, quietly suffering, end quotes, nor that he'd been asked to leave the university for failing to attend lectures. It's bizarre that they would, you know, not just inform the parents or anybody close.
But then you think, oh, they're adults now, but... You've not been an adult for 18 years, and then just one day you're meant to be completely fine.
They worked out after his death that he had missed exams, not paid accommodation fees, and was hard to contact in halls.
It's so sad, isn't it?
It's so sad. Mr. Murray used his background in data analytics to devise an early warning system to help universities build a rounded picture. And it's just really, it's a digital way of keeping an eye on students. But presumably... You'll tell us before when you start dropping it.
No, but you think you will. And, like, a lot of people have never had a mental health problem ever, you know, before they go to university. And then that is just what triggers it, is being away from home and your family and everyone you've ever known.
And it's also what we said before, the sort of unstructured...
Yeah, it's the amount of free time. Like, at least if you do sort of a science degree or something, you do, you know, 5 or 6 contact hours a day. A day, but if you do something like English Lit or history, you have about 4 lectures sometimes, 4 hours a week.
Yeah.
It's just nothing, and then the rest of the time it's just free.
Yeah. Well, you can spend some of that time preparing for the podcast. Do you have a meme of the week?
Yes. This is like a conversation thing. So, you, do you want 4 string cheese sticks? Me, no, that's way too many. You, I deep fried them and here's some marinara sauce. Me, okay, yeah, that's a nice warm-up to what I'm actually going to eat.
Very good. I almost had a meme of the week. This would have been a meme of the week if you didn't have one. My friend Francis Foster, the comedian, who sent out a tweet at the time when Donald Trump this week, I haven't talked Donald Trump, but let's not worry about it. Donald, and friend of ours, Great Alliance and all that, you know, not necessarily Donald Trump. Not Donald Trump, but the American president, the office of America, the office of the American president.
I thought,
and
let's
the
not
nation,
get into it.
Nation of America. We should have talked about it, but we didn't. But anyway, at the time, Donald Trump, there was this scare story that he was, the Americans were going to buy up our NHS and everything. It was all over Twitter, you know, people thinking that Donald Trump was going to buy up the NHS. And as a sort of parody of those tweets, Francis Foster tweeted, "If it wasn't for the NHS, my mum would have died from liver failure a few years ago. Basically, the NHS is the reason I'm still renting," which I think
honestly don't think that's that good.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant.
I've heard that joke about a gazillion times.
Only because I said it.
No, not that joke. Not his joke. That kind of joke for years and years and years.
Well, give me an example of that kind of joke.
Like, Uncle Ian makes it all the time.
Well, in what way?
So he'll... So, like, you know when Grandma choked at Christmas dinner?
Mm-hmm.
So he said... So Uncle Dave said, "Oh, for God's sake, Ian, you shouldn't have saved her." Oh, like, that's a similar kind of joke. And they say, you know, about inheritance. Like, everyone makes that joke about your inheritance.
But that's cleverly done, because it's in the... It's
yeah, no, I get it. It's in the style of those, like, thanks to the NHS, my son's still here, or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think precisely. It's as amazing as you think it is. I think it's funny, but I don't think it's, like, laugh out loud.
Let's allow the listeners to decide on that. If you want to decide on that or anything else, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can find the songs in full on the Spotify playlist, which you can search for by writing Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, me and my dad.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.